Nora Ephron has written about food over the years. One of her novels, Heartburn, also included recipes, and she once self-published a spiral-bound booklet of her favorite recipes for herself and her friends. But as far as I'm aware, except for the famous Katz's Deli scene in When Harry Met Sally, the films she's directed have been largely foodless. Her latest makes up for that with a vengeance. Julie and Julia is about two cooks, and it has lots of close-ups of fish, duck, and even a mountain of chopped onions. Meryl Streep stars, along with Amy Adams, Stanley Tucci, Chris Messina, and Linda Emond. It's based on the books Julie and Julia by Julie Powell and My Life in France by Julia Child and Alex Prudhomme, from which Nora Ephron adapted the screenplay. Julie and Julia opens tomorrow in theaters around the city. I'm very pleased that it brings Miss Ephron back to our show. Hi.
I'm so happy to be here.
Was it your idea to combine the two books into
one
movie?
No, it wasn't. I wish it had been because it's a great idea. It was the idea of Amy Robinson, who's one of the producers of the movie.
She used to be an actress. And
she did. She was
pretty
in
good too.
Mean Streets. Mm-hmm. And she was, the first producer was Eric Steele, who optioned Julie Powell's amazing story of how she cooked all 526 recipes in Julia Child's famous Mastering the Art of French Cooking in 1 year and wrote a blog about it. An amazing, amazing feat. And Amy went to Eric and said, you know, I have an idea of how to turn this into a movie and I'd like to partner with you. And it was her idea to take the story of how Julia wrote the cookbook and bounce the two stories off one another.
And you said, I felt my entire life had prepared me to write this screenplay, my obsession with food.
That is absolutely true.
Well, I can think of a few other movies where food is a central theme. Babette's Feast, Big Night, I Like Water for Chocolate, Tampopo, Eat, Drink, Man, Woman. But considering how important food is to us
all. But, you know, you just named, I don't know, five or six of them. It's hard to name too many more.
I was going to say, it's a surprisingly small number.
Yes, food is a huge part of our lives, and yet there are very few movies that are as obsessed with food as most of us are.
But yet you've said that what really drew you to the stories was not the food aspect, but what happened in these women's lives.
Well, also the food aspect. I probably was saying that to some women's group or something. I say anything to sell the movie, but sure, you know, definitely the food did, and definitely Julia Child, my God, you know, that was when I came to New York. If you didn't own a copy of her book, you were not allowed to sign a lease in this town. It just was something you had to own, something you had to cook from. You had to have people over for dinner and cook something from it.
That was 61. You were just
62,
out of college.
62. Don't make me 1 year older than I am. 62. And that was the year. And the year after, the book had been published in 1961. And everyone was cooking from it.
It really was transformative. But this is a film about transformative experiences. Julia's transformation, Julie's transformation.
Yes. I mean, both the women in the movie were lost, basically. Both of them really didn't know what to do with their lives. Julie Powell was a sort of she worked in the bureaucracy as a kind of high level, I don't know what, assistant, clerk, and helping people who were victims of 9/11, which I'm sure seemed like a good idea at the time. But after a year of doing it, she was very discouraged because she was basically just slightly more than a temp. And Julia Child was in Paris with her husband. They had been in the OSS together. And, you know, neither of them spies, but both of them working in the OSS, which was the predecessor to the CIA. And suddenly there she was, somebody's wife in Paris, with really nothing to do, no children.
Well, she hadn't been brought up to be able to do anything.
Well, in that period, you were supposed to marry someone and live happily ever after and have lots of children. And, you know, her family really wanted her to marry a nice Republican, which she didn't.
she married a guy who actually was called up before the House Un-American Activities Committee, or at least before the FBI, wasn't she?
Before the State Department investigating that. He wasn't a communist by any means, but they were left-wing.
You've said when you're in the romantic comedy business, the movie ends when people say, "Will you marry me?" Well, in this case, both of the couples are already married when the film begins. So were you working with a major handicap here?
Well, this isn't a romantic comedy. I think it's a romantic movie because it's about two very romantic marriages, really.
Well, one that seems to have a lot of sex in it. And one that, where she writes at one point, I may never have sex again.
Yes.
Surprisingly, Julia is the one who has the sex, not Julie.
One of the things I loved instantly when I started doing the research for this movie was that the couple who, Julia Child and her husband, had a fabulous, lusty time together. And you would not necessarily have guessed that by looking at them. And this very contemporary hip couple who worked very hard and, of course, add to that the blog and the cooking, never had time. I loved that. I loved that I was going to get to play with that. But I also loved that I was going to get to write a movie about marriage, which you don't get to do in a romantic comedy, that marriage is the end of a romantic comedy, not the thing. And one of the things... You know, it's hard to do a movie about marriage because a good marriage, is on some level plotless. A good marriage, people don't get a divorce.
And they don't have too many fights.
And they don't have, you just try, so it was nice that I could write about marriage and have this food plot that was essentially the plot of the movie.
And you've said that food is a major player in your marriage to Nick Pileggi.
Yes, it is.
So, and you did throw in recipes too in a novel based on an earlier marriage. So has food always been a major component of the marriage?
I think food has just been a major component of my life since I moved to New York, and we were all thrust into this mad foodie whirl where we thought nothing of, you know, going to New Orleans because we had heard a rumor about a place that was 18 miles outside it and had the greatest whatever. I mean, the amount of pilgrimages to restaurants that I have conducted in my life, I cannot begin to tell you. I traveled across Iowa once just looking for pie.
Well, I was invited to go to a very famous restaurant outside of Barcelona this year.
Did you go?
I can't afford it. But, boy, I've been thinking about it an awful lot.
Really?
El Bulli. Well, what can I do?
It's not my kind of place. I haven't
You've been to it.
No. But I know it's too much of a thing. It's 26 courses and the... No, it isn't, because the kind of foodie that I am is much... I really would not... I don't like 18-course meals, and I don't like things made out of foam, which this is what... That's what this restaurant is. Yes, he invented turning olives into foam and things like that. This is not me.
My guest is Nora Ephron, and she has written the script and directed... film which opens tomorrow in theaters around town, Julie and Julia, based on the books written by Julie Powell and also by Julia Child. We talked with Alex Proudhon about that, and Julie Powell has been on the show as well, so my audience is fully aware of all the stories behind this. But we've also talked, you and I, about your privileged childhood in the past in Beverly Hills when you're parents were successful screenwriters, and you said that you became a foodie in New York. Didn't you eat well growing up in Beverly Hills?
I ate well, but I did not know about things like dim sum. And as far as I'm concerned, brie had not even been invented. Do you know? I mean, I lived in L.A., and there was one French restaurant, and it was owned by a guy named Robert, and he spelled it. I mean, obviously it was Robert, mm-hmm. and French for it is Robert, but he spelled it R-O-B-A-I-R-E, so no one would make the mistake of, and I never went to that French restaurant growing up. We had Chinese food. That was about it. And when I went east to college and tasted French food or Italian food or Greek food, even Greek food, which is not that great, but I almost died.
And something similar happened with Julia Child. She grew up a child of privilege in Southern California, in Pasadena.
Right.
And she really didn't know about food until she was in Paris.
Yes. Do you know, Meryl Streep said this really interesting thing the other day that I had not thought of, so I'm just going to repeat it. It has nothing to do with food. But one of the things she was talking about was the way Julia talked, that amazing warble that imitable bon appetit that she, just the way she talked. I mean, she's probably the most imitated person in the world. And Meryl said it's not so much obviously a Pasadena thing, but it must have happened when she was at Smith, and that she has that kind of strange New England way of talking that, Meryl said, William F. Buckley had. And George Plimpton.
And she said herbs instead of herbs, in fact, like William F. Buckley.
Yes. I mean, it's some kind of strange WASP New England. Not that William F. Buckley was a WASP, but you know what I'm saying. Yale, Smith, et cetera. I had never thought of it in that way.
What kind of advice did you give Meryl on playing Julia? Obviously, you didn't want her to do a Rich Little kind of imitation.
Or Dan Aykroyd.
But you include the hilarious Dan Aykroyd bit on Julia that was on Saturday Night Live.
You know, when you direct Meryl, that's just a euphemism for sort of standing there. I don't mean to be too silly about it, but she really does do the work. She came in knowing exactly what she wanted to do. She had all the tapes. I had sent her the DVDs of Julia. And one of the things she was obsessed with doing was not doing later Julia, when Julia became very good at being Julia, but earlier, when you watch the first couple of years of the television shows, they are hilarious, not on purpose. She is out of breath. You have no idea if anything is going to work. Half the time it doesn't. And she wanted to be that person before she became as iconically famous as she did.
One of the things I remember about Julia, I talked to her many times, was that she used to walk stooped over because she was so tall. And you had the height problem.
But
here,
you know, she was not so stooped when she was young.
You know,
I think she probably had a little osteoporosis, and that's why she stooped, because she really was, in some weird way, completely at home with herself. And when she went to Paris in 1949 and was unquestionably the tallest person, tallest woman in Paris, never mind the tallest
person. Only Charles de Gaulle was taller than her.
Well, there were not a lot of tall French people. And she had a way of taking what must have seemed almost freakish and making people so at home with her that within weeks, she was beloved in her neighborhood. Everywhere she went, she had so much joy.
Well, how did you work it out that 5'6" Meryl Streep became 6'2" Julia Child?
Well, we just did everything, every trick you could think of, and all very modest tricks, things you could have done 30 years ago. We didn't do anything with digital anythings. I mean, we just did it all.
And including some of the other kinds of things, the food preparation. You have a deboning a duck. You have Meryl flipping an omelet, and she does it with a lot of aplomb.
I know.
I was shocked. How many takes
did
that take?
No, she was great at it. Didn't take that many takes.
And it was important to you to make it all that authentic?
Well,
I mean,
why not?
Amy's deboning
a duck. But why
not?
I mean, we all took deboning duck lessons, by the way, which I promise you I will never do again. Have you ever had a turducken?
Yeah, I've just seen the recipe.
Well, don't ever have one. That's all I can tell you. But boning a duck and stuffing it and then covering it with pastry, which we do in the movie, looks fabulous. Do not ever do it. It takes forever, and it doesn't taste nearly as good as just a plain old duck.
We should talk about Julie Powell for a moment, and Amy Adams' portrayal of her, which is quite affecting. We're talking about somebody who actually, and it's hard to believe, just 7 years ago was a blogging pioneer.
Yes.
Now
and
everybody
blogging.
Seems to be blogging.
I remember the first time I said to someone, what is a blog? I mean, I had no idea. It was such, the world is changing very quickly.
Now, of course, you have Twitter.
Yes.
I don't know whether she would have done that. That might have led to a very different kind of a book.
Yes, it certainly would have, a very short book.
Now, at the end of the film, we learn that Julia Child dismissed Julie Powell's blog as not worth her attention. My recollection of Julia was that she was an incredibly generous woman. What bothered her about Julie?
Well, Julia wasn't right about everything, you know. Meryl has a very clear memory of writing her a letter. Do you remember when Meryl Streep was involved in that thing about apples not spraying apples and organic fruit and all of that? She wrote to Julia and asked for Julia's help because it would have meant a huge amount if Julia Child had signed on to this. And Julia wrote her a very snippy letter because Julia was a big believer that in people being able to go to the supermarkets and buying food. And about 10 years later, Alice Waters talked Julia to the other side of that argument, to the right side, obviously. And so I think, you know, when I first heard that Julia hadn't liked Julie Powell's blog, I thought, well, she was almost 90, and she probably wasn't online. She probably didn't have a computer. Well, wrong. She had a computer when she was 85, and she was completely wired. She just didn't get it. She thought that one thing she thought was that Julie Powell wasn't a serious cook, which is just an absurdly ridiculous thing to say. I mean, I'm not a serious cook. I'm just a cook. I'm a home cook.
She tackled every recipe.
She tackled every recipe, and it is true that she had the ambition to become a writer as a result of this, and that her ambition was not to write a cookbook. But she, you know, I just think Julia got a little priggish about it, and she thought it wasn't respectful, and a variety of other things.
The last time you were here, we talked about a play you wrote with your sister Delia called Love, Loss, and What I Wore.
Opening off-Broadway in September.
It's being revived?
Yes. Well, not revived. That was just in workshop. Now we're doing it for real with a fantastic cast.
You had a rotating cast.
We had a rotating cast then, and we're going to have one now. We have Tyne Daly. We have Kristen Chenoweth, Samantha Bee, Rosie O'Donnell, Jane Lynch. I mean, I could name 10 Fabulous. Others, but I've lost my mind.
And what about other film projects? Anything in the works?
No, not one thing.
But you have added now Julie and Julia to, let's see, the films. And tell me if I leave any out.
Oh, don't.
Heartburn,
leave, please
Soakwood,
leave some
When
out.
Harry Met Sally, Sleepless in Seattle, You Got Mail. Another film about computers. I will leave some of the other ones out. There was a play that we talked about some years ago, Imaginary Friends, and a slew of books, another books, and we also talked not that long ago about I Feel Bad About My Neck and other thoughts on being a woman, and that became a bestseller.
It did.
Let's hope that this becomes as big a hit as that.
Well, that would be great.
Julie and Julia opens in theaters around the city tomorrow, and it has been my great pleasure once again to talk with Nora Ephron.